from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station. It's time for Sunday Mass with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
12:04 here, Sunday Mass. Reverend Arcand, nice to have you with us here today. It's a short show today. We're only going until 12:35, and then it's Red Sox baseball as the team in town, the San Diego Padres, look to complete a three-game sweep. And here with more on that and more on the trade deadline and more on the Padres' current play-by-play announcer on TV, used to be here. That is the great Sean McAdam from Mass Live, who joins me right now on Sunday Mass. Sean, how are you?
I'm great, Christian. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I was reading this morning your piece on Don Orsillo. Do you believe him that 30 fans stop him between the Prudential Center and the park even now, all this time late? He's been gone for a long time. Do you believe him when he says he's still getting stopped like that?
Yeah, I don't have much doubt about that, because there is still a lot of people, a groundswell of people who have not gotten over his departure from 9 years ago. And I actually thought that number was lower than what he would have reported. I know how popular Don remains among the Red Sox fan base, and I'm not surprised at all that he's been welcomed back to that degree this weekend.
Now, do we remember him because he was so good, and I did like him, but do we remember him because he was so good, or do we remember him so lovingly because the team seemed to care more about their actual product on the field back then, a lot more than they do now? Is it a little bit of that, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I think, you know, the decision to move on from Don is kind of this ownership's original sin, right? Mm, you know, I mean, there has been a lot of shakeup, a lot of bad PR moves, a lot of missteps along the way, but this is one that still lingers. You know, people miss Terry Francona. They certainly rue the day that he was kind of pushed out the door after 2011. But in many ways, the groundswell of opposition toward ownership and the organization in general kind of began or at least elevated with the Orsillo decision, because people just didn't understand why they decided to move on from him. And I think a lot of people still feel that way 9 years later.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Even, I mean, Xander Bogaerts isn't playing this week, obviously, but I feel like Sox fans got over that faster than they got over Don Orsillo, which is certainly saying something. With that in mind, these first two games here against the Padres, Sean, went pretty badly. It seems like as the conversation had started ramping up this week about the trade deadline, Alex Cora had some big comments about getting greedy and things like that. It seemed like a bad time for that to happen. Am I overselling it a little bit here? Is that going to make an impact?
Well, look, I think this is what happens when you have a team that is kind of right around 500. They had a good stretch there where they won four or five straight series, including beating some quality teams here, both the Phillies and Yankees. Went on the road, had a good road trip, but they're not a first-place team. And to expect that they were going to continue to win series after series without any hiccups was probably being a little naive. I think people kind of bought into that hot run that they had, and it was good, and it kind of brought attention back to the team and gave them a little energy and momentum. But they are a flawed team, and you know they probably weren't going to maintain that level for you know, a month at a time. You hope that when you get on one of those runs, it lasts as long as possible, and you can build up the wins and build yourself a little cushion in the standings. But the pitching has faltered here on this homestand with one of the losses to Toronto before the rainout, and then the two drubbings by the Padres the last couple of days, including what was clearly the worst start of the year for Tanner Houck yesterday. So when your number one guy is getting lit up for seven runs or so in four and a third innings, you know, that's kind of a snapshot of how things are going. Now, look, they could quickly turn it around and go on another pretty good run here. But as I said, let's keep things in perspective that this is a third-place team right now fighting for the third wild card. So they're going to have their ups and downs along the way.
Yeah, and they've certainly had some of those already, even with the start that I don't think a lot of people expected to see, Sean. We've talked about this. They've overperformed in a lot of ways, despite what Sam Kennedy might say. But with that said, let's assume that, you know, hypothetically, if this team were to fully invest and John Henry were to say to Craig Breslow, hey, you know, do what you got to do to keep this team in the wild card, what part of the team would you sort of attack for? Would you want to build up first? Pitching staff, bullpen, something else?
I think the bullpen's actually in pretty good shape now. Yeah. You know, that would depend on them retaining both, Martin, who would certainly have some value, and Kenley Jansen, the closer. Both of those guys are free agents to be and have been speculated to be among the guys they might consider selling. I think the bullpen's in pretty good shape. I think they could use additional rotation depth. And I think they could use another right-handed bat. The lineup is so left-handed on most days. When you look around, there are days where their best lineup features two right-handed bats of the nine guys they're running out there, and that would be Tyler O'Neill and Connor Wong, and just about everybody else is left-handed. So a right-handed bat may be somebody they could platoon with Yoshida at the DH spot and some starting pitching help, because that's faltered a little bit of late. For now, they have their fifth starter, Cooper Criswell, stashed at Worcester because the schedule allows them to kind of operate with a four-man rotation. They're sending Josh Winkowski out today as kind of a plug-in guy, and they push Brian Baio back. They've got to get him turned around. So starting pitching in a right-handed bat, I would think, would be the priorities at this point.
It's been said that this is a seller's market here as we approach this deadline. I know there's still a month and a half to go, so that could change, I guess. But do you consider it a seller's market, and do you think there's going to be a lot of competition by the top teams? Is that something the Red Sox would even be interested in getting in on?
Well, that second part is to be determined, and I suspect it might go right down to the wire before they make a determination about whether it's buy or sell. But there's no question that the introduction of the third wild card into this has convinced a lot of teams that, hey, look, all we got to have is a hot week and a half, and we're right back in it. You've even got teams who are under 500 in the National League who are de facto playoff contenders. So, you know, that limits the number of teams who are waving the white flag by the end of July. You know, you've got teams like Miami, you've got teams like Oakland, you've got teams like Chicago. They're definitely all out of the running. Colorado's another. But how much talent do those four teams have? If they had much talent, they wouldn't be playing 300 ball here as we get to July. So there's no question the expanded playoff format has turned some pretenders into contenders. And so that shrinks the number of teams who are throwing in the towel on the rest of the season, and the few teams that have some people to move, like the Marlins, can expect to inflate the asking prices because there are far more buyers than sellers.
We've heard Kennedy and other people in the front office say things along the line. Breslow, I think, said this too, about we don't want to sacrifice wins in the future for wins now today by making drastic moves or moves that would end up mortgaging the future in some ways. Do you think that their farm system right now is at a point? Obviously, the top three guys I don't think are going to get moved, but do you think that below that they have the type of prospects that they can move for a smaller deal? I remember at the trade deadline last year, Sean, Jack Flaherty went for a couple of single A guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like there was, for pitching anyway, you could get it last year if you wanted to. Do they have those kind of prospects?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it, Christian. Even go back to the last real significant acquisition they made at the deadline, and that would be Kyle Schwarber in 21. They gave up a kid at A-ball that really has done nothing with Washington since. So, everybody gets super protective about the prospects and worries that every guy that you deal off in July is going to turn into Jeff Bagwell down the line. That's probably an overreaction. But there's little question that the Red Sox farm system has improved markedly over the last few years, and that there are some people that they could use, and, you know, they've got some duplication or in their inventory and could probably move some of those guys and still get some help and not worry about disrupting their future. I think you're right that The top three guys are absolutely not going to get moved, but there's enough where they can dip into the inventory and not hurt themselves in the future by doing that.
All right, before we let you go, Sean, this Red Sox team, Jaron Duran, Rafaela, Hamilton, a lot of fast guys, a lot of base stealing going on here, and that type of play, which I love. I mean, I think it's really fun. It's been electric at the park watching these games with these guys running like this. Is that something that's sustainable over 162 games? Is it something that they can do all year?
Yeah, I think if you have an athletic roster, and look, you know, the guys that we're talking about aren't one-dimensional. You know, Duran has turned into a pretty good all-around player. He flashes a little power. He's improved defensively, so he can contribute in other ways. Hamilton has figured some things out offensively since the first few weeks, and also gives them a plus defender either at short or second base. And Rafael is the third guy in that group. You know, he's learning still, but you know, he's on pace now to finish with 15 homers and 80 RBI. That's pretty good for a guy that you didn't really know much about or weren't sure about at the start of the season. So, you know, the old saw that you hear, Christian, that speed doesn't slump. The trick is you've got to get on base to use it. But right. For the most part, those three guys have done enough of that. So I think that can continue to be a weapon. But it would be nice to fortify that lineup, as we talked about earlier, with maybe another righty power bat. You have some uncertainty going forward about the durability of Tyler O'Neill. So I think that's why a right-handed bat with some pop, either to platoon with Yoshida in the DH spot or someone that you could use at a couple of different outfield spots, would be a nice acquisition for them if they end up buying.
All right, we'll leave it right there. From your lips to God's ear, Sean McAdam, I hope they do exactly what you just said and get some pitching. But, you know, one thing at a time. That's Sean McAdam from Mass Live covering the game here at Fenway. Thanks so much for the time, Sean. I know you're busy today.
Appreciate it, Christian. Thanks for having me.
All right. Once again, that's Sean McAdam, Mass Live. You can read his latest on the return of Don Orsillo. It's up. It's up on there now. I was just reading it this morning. A good pregame read there, especially for you big Orsillo fans who miss him. I definitely listen. I think that the Nesson boost's been good this year. I honestly, I mean, I know other people have different opinions on it, and everybody still misses Don, but I've kind of liked it so far. It's no WEEI booth, of course. It's no Will Fleming, Joe Castiglione, Lou Maloney, etc. Although Lou is also in the Nesson booth sometimes, but you know what I mean. It's not, we got the best one here for sure. But I haven't, I don't know. I mean, out of sight, out of mind, I guess, with Orsillo sometimes. But really, what you missed with Orsillo, as good as he was, you missed the chemistry, right? You missed the chemistry there with Remy, God rest his soul. You missed the chemistry with Eckersley, like they were funny together. And, you know, with O'Brien and Remy, they just didn't, I don't feel like they had enough time to develop that. And Eckersley's kind of out the door now, so you don't hear it with him anymore. And now they're sort of starting over and trying to develop it. And I honestly think it's not been bad this year. Just one man's opinion. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the week that the NFL had. And it's, if you don't know, the NFL is going to be paying lots of people, and not just ex-players. We're talking like civilians and businesses, lots of money for the way that they played some dirty pool here with the Sunday ticket. We'll get into all of that and some potential fallout, maybe, for the Patriots and their spending. We'll get into all of that right after I tell you what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Tough night at the ballpark for Tanner Houck and the Red Sox. They get smoked by the Padres. 11-1 your final score. Houck gave up 7 earned runs in just 4 1/3 innings. Red Sox will be looking to avoid the sweep later today. A 1:35 start time. Josh Winkowski on the mound for Boston. You can hear the game right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI, the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Coverage starts at 12:35 with the Mass Mutual pregame show, which will be hosted by our good friend Joe Weil. The Celtics yesterday picked up Sam Hauser's team option for next season. It's worth $2.1 million. The Bruins drafted a 6'7" center named Dean Letourneau in the first round of the draft last night. The draft is now over, by the way. He will play at BC in the fall. They also made a trade as they shipped out Jacob Lauko and pick 122 to Minnesota for veteran forward Vinny Lettieri. They also picked up pick 110, which they used to draft defenseman Elliot Greenwald. I'm Christian Arcan, and that's what's trending.
This is Sunday Mass on WEEI with Christian Arcand.
We pursued the people we wanted in free agency. There was, you know, one outstanding receiver that unfortunately we couldn't close. It was not because of finance. It was, he made clearly his girlfriend wanted to be in the South, and we had a situation where the taxes were like almost 10% higher, and we offered or were willing to keep going to, at that premium, but he didn't. He didn't want to be in the Northeast, and part of it might be the quarterback situation as well.
All right, that was Robert Kraft back in March talking about why they didn't end up with Calvin Ridley. Now, why did I play it? Why'd you play that, Arcand? What's that about? Or why'd you play that, Nico? It's because I told him to. But the reason why is because the NFL had a hell of a week. And as a reverend, I don't use that term lightly. It was a tough week for the Shield and the National Football League. How tough? Try a couple $1 billion tough, which may be more than that. It may end up being more than the $4.7 billion that the NFL was ordered to pay individual fans and also businesses that purchased Sunday ticket. That verdict was delivered by the U.S. District Court in the Central District of California. It was a lawsuit that was filed almost a decade ago by a bar in San Francisco called Mucky Duck. That's true. It's called Mucky Duck. And they accused the NFL of creating a system that violated antitrust laws because of the structure of Sunday Ticket. The lawsuit said that the league was bundling out-of-market games of every team into one package and eliminated the option to purchase a package of just one team. So if you were a out-of-towner and you wanted to watch the Packers, for example, and you could get just the Packers games and not have to buy the entire Sunday ticket. Many fans and bars around the country want to watch their own games. And the lawsuit said the NFL didn't give them the option and instead drove up the price. And the big reveal in the trial was that ESPN proposed that the NFL could take over the Sunday ticket from DirecTV after last season, and the service would be priced at $70. Packages for individual teams would be allowed. You could say, I just want the Patriots, or I just want the Texans, or I just want the Packers, or the Bills, or the Jets, or whoever. And the NFL said, no, we're going to go to YouTube TV, and the lowest price on YouTube TV is going to be $350. And you already have to be subscribed to YouTube TV, which is like $100 a month now. And the NFL, I don't want to say they got completely pantsed here because they can afford this, but they are going to have to pay 2.4 million fans who purchased Sunday ticket about $2,000. And 48,000 business owners will get about $2,000 each for what happened there. It's going to be a while before any of this actually gets, you know, the checks cut and everything. And I don't know how long you had to be a subscriber to Sunday Ticket before you could cash in on this. I had Sunday Ticket like when I was a sophomore in college maybe, but I only had it for 2 years and then I ditched DirecTV. So I don't know. I doubt I'm getting anything for this. And it was me and my two roommates. We all paid for it together. So I doubt that we're getting made whole with all this. But I was reading about this, and there's still a few hurdles. Okay, there's post-trial motions and appeals and all that other stuff. So it may be a while before they end up having to pay anything, and they may end up having the payments get cut down by another court. Like, that's all very possible. Everybody in Massachusetts is a legal expert now, thanks to this Karen retrial. We know all about this stuff. But I was reading about it, and, you know, it may not end up being much at all. But it's still going to be a lot of money. It's still going to be, like, for each team, twice their payroll to pay back everything that's owed here in the billions. And it could get tripled. It could get tripled up to, like, $15 billion. All that to say this. Robert Kraft told us in March And this lawsuit was filed 10 years ago, by the way, so they knew this was coming. Every owner in the league, Roger Goodell, they all knew exactly what was going to happen here, and they were aware that they were going to get some pretty bad, not bad headlines necessarily, because this all happened a while ago, but people are going to read that the NFL violated something and is paying a lot of money for it, right? Like, I just gave you the details, but that's what people are mostly going to be getting. And ironically, or maybe it's not ironic at all, the Patriots still have the most amount of cap space in the NFL. They have an owner who I'm sure was aware of this lawsuit and what was going to happen. They have a statue to build, which once they pay the $500 million, whatever it is for each team, I wonder if that statue is now going to be made of aluminum, aluminum foil, or paper mache maybe. A papier-mâché Tom Brady statue? What do you think of that, Nico? What other cheap material could they use now that all their money is going to the Sunday Ticket lawsuit? I'd imagine there's other... What, you ever seen those statues that are made out of, like, chicken wire? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I have. Listen, I already have paper straws. We're not getting paper statues. Not on my watch. I won't allow this to happen.
We might. I'm saying.
It can't.
Anyway, it may take a while for all of this to happen, but I do remember reading through that and sort of thinking, you know, the Patriots are still one of the most expensive tickets in the NFL. There is going to be, I think, a lot less interest in the team this year, just based on how they are and how it's clearly a rebuild, and how I think a lot of fans don't have great faith in the coaching staff and everybody who assembled this team to put a great product out on the field this year. It really all is going to land on Drake May and his shoulders, or his one shoulder, I should say, how much interest this team is going to attract, because outside of him, there's just not much to root for.
Do you think it will be less than last year? Because I think people will be more interested, even if Drake May's on the sidelines. Just
they'll be interested
the potential
in seeing
May,
but
coming in.
Maybe, but I think if it's Jacoby Brissett out there starting games for the first month, people are going to tune out. I think people are going to tune this team out if they are going to come to expect to see Jacoby Brissett starting all these games. And I don't even say that to, you know, rip Jacoby Brissett. He's what he is, you know. He was brought in to fill a certain role, and I think that that's now sort of expanded into something more than it should be, because this team doesn't want to invest in a real offense to surround their rookie quarterback with that could maybe help guide him through a decent year. And they don't want to spend on an offensive line. They don't want to spend on all these things. Maybe because they know they had to pay $15 billion to everybody who bought Sunday Ticket. I have no idea. All I know is that it kind of sucks right now. And I think that the spending, I mean, listen, you can all see it. We can all tell. It's been a rough summer. It's been a rough summer for the Patriots. That was a fun Tom Brady night that they had. That was a good moment, but that's over. And now they have to face their actual team in this actual season and what that's going to be. And I think it's going to be rocky, certainly to start off, especially if you got Brissett going out there. I think you might see some empty seats. Patriots aren't having a great summer, I don't think. If you love Drake May, then maybe you disagree. But I wasn't a huge fan of them drafting a quarterback there. But they're not having the worst summer. Out of every team in sports right now, I got to say, I think the Lakers are having the worst summer. That, to me, first of all, they hired a podcaster to be their next head coach just because he was kissing the main player's ass. And then they drafted that same main player's son, and I say main as in principal, like the main guy on the team, not like he was playing in Maine. But they bring in the son, who has become this joke now, which I think is a little unfortunate for him. If I was him, I would have begged and pleaded the Lakers not to draft me. And I know the agent came out and said, well, if some other team drafts him, he's just going to go play in Australia. I'd say, great. G'day, mate. I'm going to Australia. I'm going to Australia for as long as I can. Then if I'm ready and I'm good enough to be picked by a team and join a G League team because they like how I played in Australia, great. But if they're just taking me here so I can go play with my dad, because my dad really wants to, because he's having this weird midlife crisis or whatever it is that's going on here, then I'm all set. I'll go to Australia. No, not what's happening. And LeBron opted out, by the way. He's opting out of his contract, so there's that too. Is he having the worst summer? I saw an article that said Jamarcus Russell. Did you see this, Nico? Do you know who Jamarcus Russell is? Do you remember him?
I remember the name vaguely.
So Jamarcus Russell was the first overall pick. I don't even remember when, 2010 maybe, 2011? It was a long time ago. He was picked out of LSU. He was the first overall pick, and he went to the Raiders, and he was just a mess. Like, he couldn't put one foot in front of the other. And he was out of the league in a couple of years, and I just read that he was an assistant coach on a high school football team, and he just got arrested because someone someone paid a check that was supposed to go to the team and he just deposited it in his own account. That's rough. It's a rough summer for him. Rough summer for the parents of the Hawk Tua girl. Rough summer for Rory McIlroy. A rough summer for Joe Biden. I'd say it's not been a great summer for him so far. And we have a caller on the line now who knows the Jaylen Brown impersonator and wants to tell me about him. We're going to have to save this for another time. John in Connecticut, if you actually do know that guy, call into Jones and Mego at some point this week. We're here Monday and Tuesday. That's when you'll hear Jones, Mego, and I all together, I think. And then we're off for the rest of the week. So we'll talk to you then. Stay tuned. Red Sox baseball coming up. Sox trying to avoid the sweep. Joe Weil has your pregame show. I'm out of here. Mass has ended. Go in peace. Thanks to Sean McAdam. Nico, great job. We'll talk to you on Monday. Bye.